Simon Deakin, Director of the Centre for Business Research.
Simon, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Centre for Business Research podcast series today on your two-day labour standards workshop. If we move on to the second paper, tell us a little bit about that.
This paper is essentially looking at the impact of labour laws. The paper I wrote with my colleague Prabhajit Sarkar, does labour regulation improve income distribution? That is, does it make it more equal? Nevertheless, if it does that, is there a trade-off? Decreased employment and lower productivity? That's a huge question in the social sciences. So we use a new data set to answer that question. Prabhajit conducted time series regression analysis using a particular type of economic model, a regression model called a pooled mean group estimator model. And this regression model tries to estimate both short-term and long-term effects of an external change, such as a legal change, which impacts on the economy. It impacts upon employment relationships. It alters costs for firms, maybe negatively. Firms have costs that wouldn't otherwise bear. Maybe positive. Undercutting is ruled out. Firms can observe labour standards more reliably and credibly if there's legal support for them. There may be a reduction in transaction costs, a reduction in opportunism once laws are enacted. All these effects need to be studied empirically. That was the purpose of the paper.
Your findings from that paper, they were positive.
They're positive for one view of labour law. What the paper does is look at 36 rich countries, OECD countries, developed countries, for which we have long runs of data going back to the 1990s on what we would call here the outcome variables. How does the law affect the economy in terms of productivity, employment and unemployment? We combine those data with our own data set, which has a longer time series, but actually our data go back further than many other data sets do. We're limited in what we can do at the moment, but we try not to do an analysis with missing data. So we've got continuous time series. We find that there's generally a certain type of relationship in this 36-country sample, that labour laws, when they become more worker-protective, on average have the effect of increasing the so-called labour share, that is to say, the share of national production going into wages as opposed to profits. That's somewhat of a simplification, but the basic idea is worker-protective labour laws increase labour's share of national output, and to that extent, one may say that this results in a more equal or even distribution. But of course, there may be people who say maybe shareholders aren't getting enough. So, okay, it depends how you interpret the result. We also found evidence that these laws generally do, especially dismissal laws, increase productivity. That's a way of saying that these dismissal laws induce firms to use labour more efficiently, basically.
The general consensus is that if you put more regulation and you give workers more rights, it's more expensive for the employer, so therefore it costs business and it's not good for business. It leads to a lack of growth, a lack of productivity. Your findings were the reverse of that.
There are lots of ways in which labour laws are needed. Even the World Bank, which had been critical of labour laws, saying they harm workers when they're meant to help them, by 2015 had changed its mind and said that actually labour regulations were, quote, unquestionably necessary, unquote, not just to promote fairness, fair outcomes, which they do on the whole, but also to make contracting more efficient. And what they meant by that was that the labour contract, the employment contract, is uncertain, it's open-ended, it's not self-enforcing. It does create the possibility of opportunism and exploitation, and that leads to a breakdown in trust, a breakdown in cooperation between the two sides, both individually and collectively. Now, labour law norms, these are fairness norms inserted into the employment contract or into collective labour relationships. They give workers voice at work. They provide a floor of rights below which wages and terms won't go. They regulate competition across a sector. They provide for a consumption-led model for the economy, not just an investment-led model. They provide a basis for firms to sell their own products to their own workers and other people. Okay, so labour laws have all these potentially very positive effects. Yes, they may have negative effects. So nothing is clear-cut. Labour laws may lead to a distortion of market outcomes. They could conceivably create a two-tier labour market with employers having incentives to employ people in casual work forms or informal work forms to avoid regulation. All these things are possible. We need to study them. What we found was that for this sample of developed, advanced, so-called rich countries, on the whole, which have tough labour laws, these are countries which have stricter labour laws than most developing countries, also have more equality, actually, have less inequality, and also tend to be more productive, tend to be more efficient. And I think the basic message is that for this sample of countries, over many, many decades, and we just looked at the most recent ones, labour laws have been compatible with an increase in the efficiency of the economy, an increase in well-being, and actually more equal outcomes over time. Now, that's not always the message you hear, but I think...
It's not a fashionable message.
Well, it hasn't been a fashionable message for some time, but actually, if you look closely at what the OECD has recently said and the World Bank has recently said, they have qualified the message of the 1990s, which was labour laws harm workers. They take a much more nuanced view. Now, in some ways, therefore, so does the academy, so does academic research, is much more nuanced on this issue than it was 30 or even 20 years ago. So national governments, to some degree, are behind the curve. Perhaps this country needs experts occasionally. Here's one area where not just the experts, but the international agencies are increasingly taking a more nuanced view than some governments are taking.
Prabirjit Sarkar, Professor of Economics, Jadavpur University, Calcutta. Impact of labor regulations on employment and income distribution. Already there is a neoliberal view that labor market should be more flexible, there should be labor market deregulations. We actually could not believe that this kind of outcome is possible. So then once we got the data, then we try to examine that whether this neoliberal view is correct or not. Because there is another kind of view, they are also telling something different. So what is the truth? So that actually prompted our study.
You had information already available to you, 117 countries between 1970 to 2013, and you actually took a sample of 36 from 1995 to 2012. Why did you study this particular sample?
Because of the lack of data, because all the economic indicators, this data you don't get for all the countries, particularly chronologically, without any break, you can't get data like that. So that's why we have to choose a sample for which we have all the data. Even the shorter time period, because even for this country, the 36 countries, this kind of data over a long span for which we have Leximity data, that are not there.
The prevailing wisdom is often that the more labour regulation you have, then it will impact adversely on employees because people won't want to take them on, and it will add costs to the employer for the economy. But you found exactly the opposite. You concluded that on the whole, labour regulation has a favourable effect.
In our regression, we actually made a proper kind of analysis because labour regulations or any regulation cannot have an instant effect. It has a short-run effect or may not be any short-run effect. But then over time, with some different kinds of adjustment, finally we can have a long-term fundamental relationship between the two. And we did an econometric tool where actually this kind of analysis is captured. So there we got this kind of result. But usually most of the studies that are actually saying something different, they don't take into account this kind of thing. And also sometimes they don't have chronologically arranged proper data. So they just have a sketchy of data, some periods are missing and all this. And also we took a proper control because sometimes it happens that you see that different countries may have different cyclical fluctuations. We should have a proper control for that. We used GDP growth because you see that I think that employment depends more on GDP growth rather than labor regulation.
In terms of the findings of your study, does labour regulation hurt labour by reducing employment opportunities?
No, we didn't find any evidence in favour of that, the viewpoint that labour regulation hurts labour. Because we have three models, and in the three models, either we get no result or we get a result favourable to the labour regulations. So in that way, it goes against a conventional standpoint. There are two standpoints, actually. One is neoliberal standpoint, and another is a little bit socialist type of standpoint. And neoliberal standpoint, actually, they are challenging the socialist standpoint. But we got some more support in favor of socialist standpoint. Because you see that when labor regulations are there, that actually make labor more productive, and maybe they have more commitment. And also, even in neoclassical theory, they have one kind of theory that is called efficiency wage hypothesis. So they don't actually take into account that when they are making a neoliberal standpoint. You'll be more efficient if you get better wage. And even if you take my case, that if I have a hire and fire in my university, I would never do research. Because you see that I am always, sword is hanging on my head, that any day I will be fired. So I will be not do research, anything, getting some. Always I will try to write a paper very quickly without proper thinking, because always there is something hanging on my head. So even from personal experience also, I think that if there is a proper job security, that actually improves productivity.
Your conclusion that there's no strong evidence that labour regulation hurts labour by reducing employment opportunities, you add especially for youth.
Actually, even for youth also, it doesn't matter much. Actually, you see that when the economy is flourishing, then it matters little for the employer whether the labour regulations are too strict or not. And when the economy is not flourishing at all, even in that case, you see that whatever hire and fire you introduce, nobody will employ you because they don't have any market for their product. You see that when there is a flourishing economy, companies will not bother whether there is a strict labor regulation, because they will always make a profit. If they give you a proper environment of work and all kinds of strict regulation, they don't matter. But when there is a economic depression, then if the workers say we'll cut our wages to half, one third, even they will not employ until unless you work free. So this is the problem actually. So in any way, you see that labor regulations is actually good for labor efficiency and all these things. And employment has nothing to do with the labor regulation in that sense.
Simon, this is really an important and influential piece of research. Does labor regulation improve income distribution at the cost of decreased employment and productivity? Governments need to take note of it.
Whether it turns out to be influential remains to be seen, but I think the data set will be used by lots of people for their own purposes. And our research, some papers have already been published, some have been disseminated, is, I think, inviting those who argue for deregulation to reaffirm their case on the basis of evidence and not just on the basis of theory. What we're seeing is a complex empirical picture. The evidence can be used to dig more deeply into these issues than people have hitherto been able to do. So this is not to prejudice a debate which will continue forever. The debate about how labour regulation works is not a new one, and this paper and papers like it won't conclude it. But we think that this line of work potentially offers a new angle on some very old questions and should be taken seriously by policymakers as well as by academics, yes.
Simon Deacon, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Centre for Business Research podcast series on your Labour Standards Workshop, the first day.
Thank you, Bonnie.